Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mary, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's program, Living with T-Cell Lymphoma, and this is part two, so it's update on peripheral T-cell lymphoma, or PTCL, and this is a very important program, and it's a wonderful opportunity for you to learn a great deal about PTCL, and this is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, as well as a number of other organizations who've actually helped make this all possible. And I want to say that we have on the call today, because of all this collaborative effort, over 422 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States, and we have international participants from Argentina, Canada, China, Korea, Mexico, Syria, and Venezuela, and the United Kingdom, and really from all over the world. So it's really a credit to each of you that you have chosen to spend the next hour with us. I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is an outline of what our speakers will be covering. There also is information about all the different collaborating organizations and particularly information certainly about the Lymphoma Research Foundation and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation as wonderful resources for you as well. And there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. Your feedback to us is critically important so that we plan programs that best meet your needs. And you think about it, who but each of you can tell us the programs that would mean the most to you and that would be the most helpful to you. Indeed, the topic for today's program was one that many of you have asked us to do repeatedly, and so here we have this program. So we do listen to your feedback, and indeed you are, to some extent, you're the people who tell us what we should be doing, and we try very hard to do it. Now, today's program was supported through grants to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Allos Therapeutics, Celgene, and Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. And I really want to thank them for their support of today's program and this entire series as well. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today. And our first speaker is Dr. Stephen Hurwitz. Dr. Hurwitz is Assistant Attending Physician, Lymphoma Service, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Hurwitz is going to discuss an overview of PTCL, current treatment options, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Hurwitz.
Hi. Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here. These calls, I think, are really great in terms of getting good direct information out to people. So today I'm going to start off the call by talking about a little bit about an overview of peripheral T-cell lymphoma and just go over some basic definitions so we're all using the same terminology, then talk about some of the current standard treatment options, communicating with your healthcare team, and then I'll pass it off to one of my friends and colleagues, Dr. Andre Shustov from Seattle, to talk about some of the exciting new therapies that we have. So basically, when we start thinking about PTCL, the term means peripheral T-cell lymphoma. Lymphomas, very basically, are cancers of a kind of white blood cell called a lymphocyte. And that kind of white blood cell, if it starts to behave as a cancer, meaning that those cells start to grow too much abnormally or the cells don't die normally, so you accumulate those cells, that's basically what we call a lymphoma. There are over 60 different kinds of lymphoma, so really the term lymphoma is not very specific, and it's important that people who have lymphoma understand as much as possible which specific type they have. There's a couple of different ways of dividing lymphomas. One of the ways is by the cell of origin, meaning in your body as part of your immune system, you have different kinds of normal lymphocytes or different kinds of those normal white blood cells. And those basically are called B cells, which have one job in the immune system, T cells, which have a different job in the immune system, and then NK cells, which have a third job in the immune system. There's a lot of overlap between the NK cells and the T cells, so often we tend to lump them together and call them NK T cell lymphomas. There's a different way of thinking about lymphomas that don't really have to do with the cell that they come from. if you had a normal B cell that became a lymphoma, we would call that a B cell lymphoma. If you had a normal T cell that became a lymphoma, we would call that a T cell lymphoma. But irrespective of those names, we can also think about these lymphomas in terms of how they behave in the person. And we divide them into two very broad categories, and what we call aggressive lymphomas and what we call indolent lymphomas. Aggressive lymphomas are called aggressive lymphomas because that means that those lymphomas tend to grow relatively quickly. And by grow quickly, what your doctors mean or what we mean is that if you were observing someone, you would see their lymph nodes grow over weeks to months. That would be the growth rate of an aggressive lymphoma. It doesn't have anything to do with prognosis or treatment outcome. The term aggressive really describes how they grow. And then the term indolent lymphoma is used for slow-growing lymphomas, and those are lymphomas that often, if you observe them, might not grow at all or might grow very slowly over years. Again, not relating to treatment or prognosis, but just relating to the growth rate. Most of the T-cell lymphomas fall in the category of aggressive lymphomas, meaning that they grow relatively quickly over weeks to months. The term peripheral T-cell lymphoma is really, again, trying to refer to the cell that becomes the cancer cell in somebody. So where your T-cells initially come from is they, like all your white blood cells, the cells in the body, initially start in the bone marrow. And then T-cells kind of mature or pass through an organ in the body called the thymus. And because they come through that organ, that's why they're called T-cells. The T stands for thymus. Once a T-cell has passed through the thymus, meaning it's no longer an immature or a newly formed T-cell, but a T-cell that's now out in the body doing its normal job in the immune system, we call that a peripheral T-cell or a mature T-cell. So the term peripheral doesn't really have anything to do with where the cell is in the body. It really more refers to the development of that cell, that that's not an immature T-cell, but that's a mature T-cell. And because those T-cells have important jobs in the immune system, they can really be anywhere in the body. They can be in lymph nodes, they could be in organs, they could be in the skin, they could even go back to the bone marrow. But because it's trafficked through the thymus or because it's a mature T-cell, we call that a peripheral T-cell. If one of those cells becomes a cancer, then we call that a peripheral T-cell lymphoma. And that gets to a somewhat specific name. But even if you're down to that level of a peripheral T-cell lymphoma, it's still not very specific because there's still about 20 or so different kinds of peripheral T-cell lymphoma. Some of the most common ones are called angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma. So that would be a kind of mature or peripheral T-cell lymphoma that had a specific name. Anaplastic large cell lymphoma, and there's a couple of different varieties of anaplastic large cell lymphoma. There's things called nasal NKT cell lymphomas. There's something called subcutaneous paniculitis-like T cell lymphoma. But basically, there's a long list of these different kinds of mature T cell lymphomas that as doctors and pathologists learn better how to clearly identify that disease, they'll often give that disease a specific name. That being said, the biggest group of peripheral T cell lymphomas is something called peripheral T cell lymphoma not otherwise specified. Meaning, as hard as we try to give your lymphoma-specific name, the most common group are the group that don't have another name, and therefore we just call them in general peripheral T-cell lymphoma or peripheral T-cell lymphoma not otherwise specified. And if you read your path reports, you'll often see this term or you'll see a specific type of T-cell lymphoma. Pretty much all of those systemic or peripheral T-cell lymphomas behave generally aggressively and are generally treated with chemotherapy and usually combinations of chemotherapy drugs. Now, this is a little different, and sometimes it's confusing, from cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. So there's a whole other group of diseases that are called cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, and those are, again, T-cell lymphomas, but rather than naming those diseases based on the cell they come from, those diseases are called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma because they tend to start in the skin. The word cutaneous means skin. And many of those diseases start in the skin, and many of those diseases are only in the skin. In general, the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas tend to behave more like an indolent lymphoma, meaning they tend to grow slowly, and therefore our treatment strategies are more like an indolent lymphoma, which I'll explain in a minute. To finally make it even more confusing in trying to understand what you have, is very often peripheral T-cell lymphomas, or those systemic, usually aggressive T-cell lymphomas of the mature T-cells, maybe as much as 1 in 3 times people with those lymphomas can have involvement of the skin, meaning lesions or lumps or tumors in the skin. If you have a peripheral T-cell lymphoma in the skin, we still call that a peripheral T-cell lymphoma, meaning the term cutaneous or skin-only T-cell lymphoma is really referring to specific diseases that are always in the skin or usually in the skin. I know this is really confusing, and as I'm listening to myself say it, it gets more confusing. But if you have an aggressive T-cell lymphoma that goes to the skin, we don't call that a cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. We call that an aggressive or a peripheral T-cell lymphoma. So now that I'm sure that that is crystal clear to everybody, we'll talk a little bit about treatment. So for most of the aggressive T-cell lymphomas, those are, again, the systemic peripheral T-cell lymphomas, we try to treat those usually with combination chemotherapy. These are diseases that can grow quickly, that can make you sick, and the goal of treatment is to initially get the disease under control, put it into remission, and hopefully in some cases to cure the person. And when we say the word cure for peripheral T-cell lymphomas, we mean that the lymphomas would go away and never come back. To do that or to have a chance of getting rid of these forever, that usually requires combination chemotherapies, usually at least 4 drug chemotherapy regimens and sometimes even 5 or more. The most commonly used combination chemotherapy regimen for peripheral T-cell lymphomas as well as for other aggressive lymphomas is a regimen called CHOP. And CHOP is 4 drugs. 3 of them are given intravenously, cyclophosphamide, doxorubicin, vincristine, and then there's a pill called prednisone, which is a steroid medication, which steroids for lymphomas are really part of the treatment. So that would be the most common regimen, and we know that if we give CHOP to people with systemic or aggressive peripheral T-cell lymphomas, that most people will have their lymphoma improve either partly or completely, meaning it's possible to go into complete remission. What's a little more challenging in terms of the peripheral T-cell lymphomas has been having that lymphoma stay away forever. And more often than we would like, the lymphoma can come back even after strong chemotherapy like CHOP. So because of that, a lot of doctors and researchers have looked into ways of trying to make CHOP stronger. And commonly we'll add additional drugs to CHOP. There's a drug called etoposide, which we would sometimes add in different ways. There's a regimen called EPOC, which is using the drugs of CHOP plus etoposide given in a little different way. There's other regimens called ICE or hyper-CVAD. But basically, the concept is pretty much the same, which is trying to give very strong combinations of chemotherapy to try to get the lymphoma into remission and have it go away forever. And that's the approach that the majority of people, and our data is that probably about 85% of people with aggressive T-cell lymphomas will have an initial treatment that's either CHOP or something sort of in that same concept. There's a couple of different lymphomas of the aggressive T-cell lymphomas, the NK T-cell lymphomas, or the nasal NK T-cell lymphomas, which tend to start in the nasopharynx. These are we see in the U.S., but they're much more common in Asia. There's another lymphoma called HTLV-1-associated lymphoma, which is a very rare lymphoma. Again, more common that one in Japan, but we do see some in the United States. And some of these less common aggressive T-cell lymphomas have their own treatment that's a little different than the CHOP regimens we've talked about. Other things that people have looked at as part of initial therapy to try to get these lymphomas better and have them never go away are the use of very strong doses of chemotherapy or something that we would call bone marrow or stem cell transplant. And for some people, particularly people who are younger and in very good condition, sometimes your doctor would think about, at the end of your initial therapy, using something like a bone marrow transplant, either from your own stem cells or from somebody else's stem cells, to really try to see that the lymphoma never came back. It's not completely clear that that's better, but it's a strategy that sometimes people look at, and for individual patients, sometimes that's recommended. If the lymphoma either doesn't go away completely or comes back even after all this treatment, there are other treatments that can be given, and some of those fall into a lot of the new drugs that Dr. Shustov's going to be talking about, as well as some clinical trials. One of the things that we do relatively standardly, if the lymphoma has come back, would be think about, again, a bone marrow or stem cell transplant if you hadn't had that as part of your initial therapy. And those treatments, again, come in 2 different ways. There's a way of doing a bone marrow transplant with your own stem cells, which is really a way of facilitating higher or stronger doses of chemotherapy to try to get rid of any lymphoma that came back or survived the initial chemotherapy. And then there's a way of doing a bone marrow transplant or using cells from a donor, either a relative or someone unrelated, or even at time umbilical cord blood. And that's a way of trying to give a more powerful new immune system. So to really try to change out your immune system and put a new immune system in your body, with the hopes that that new immune system can really fight off the T-cell lymphoma and live in your body and really keep it away forever. That treatment gets quite complicated, and it does have some risks, but it is a way, if the lymphoma has come back or doesn't go away, that sometimes we'll think about trying to treat someone to get rid of it for good. Both of those treatments, the stem cell transplants from your own stem cells or bone marrow stem cell transplant from somebody else, would require that the person have a good disease control or be in remission for those to have their best chance of working. And how you get into remission a second time or a third time will be something also that Dr. Shustov will talk about. Just in my last minute or two, I'm going to make a few comments on communicating with your healthcare team. One of the things we know about T-cell lymphomas is we know that they're rare diseases. Actually, I didn't mention this. Rare disease in the sense that we think there's about 6,000 to 9,000 people diagnosed with these diseases every year in the United States. So if you think about that compared to lung or breast or prostate cancer, where we're probably talking about 180 to 200,000 people a year, that these are really quite uncommon diseases. And whenever you have a rare disease, it's always a little more difficult to get reliable information. Everyone's experience is a little different because, you know, we all see many patients with these diseases, but we don't see thousands. So I think the best thing is to have a really open communication with your healthcare team and understand that there's a lot about these diseases we know, but also a lot about these diseases that we don't know, or maybe some of our beliefs about these diseases are not confirmed with huge studies, and they're really based on our practice and experience. And I think in that case, it's often good to have a very open communication with your healthcare team, and it's something where those of us who treat these diseases will often call our colleagues to get advice, you know, what would you do in this situation, or have you ever seen this? And I think that kind of free open communication with the patients and their doctors and your doctors and other doctors, I think, is often very helpful, particularly when we're trying to tackle rare diseases that we're still sort of learning new things about every day. So I think I will wrap up my comments there and hand it off to Dr. Shustov, and then we can take questions at the end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Horowitz, for a wonderful presentation and also for making it quite understandable to everybody and clear. And I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. Excellent presentation. Our next speaker is Dr. Andrei Shustov, and Dr. Shustov is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology, University of Washington School of Medicine, Research Associate, Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. Dr. Shustov is going to address new treatment approaches, the role of clinical trials, and how research contributes to your treatment options. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Shustov.
Thank you, and good day, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on what part of the world you're in and listening. It is a pleasure to participate in this conference call and introduce some new and very exciting treatment strategies or treatment options for patients with peripheral T-cell lymphomas. For a very long time, we had very limited options for this rare lymphoma, and most of the clinical trials in the past were focusing on the other counterpart of aggressive lymphomas, B-cell lymphomas, because they're more common. It was easier to do clinical studies in this group. Now we have three new agents that were introduced to treat specifically peripheral T-cell lymphomas, owing to international collaboration of major academic centers in the world that allowed us to come up with reasonable number of patients sufficient to really prove that there are new agents that are active in this disease. I wanted to also thank Dr. Horowitz for a fantastic overview of peripheral T-cell lymphomas, their biology and concepts of treatment, and making it very understandable that paved the road for discussion of new treatments. I will now introduce you to three new drugs that were recently tested specifically in peripheral T-cell lymphomas and successfully approved in the United States and potentially in the near future in Europe to treat patients with this challenging lymphomas. I will go in the order of approval of this drug in the United States, not necessarily order of their highest activity. The first agent I would like to talk about that is used to treat patients now in a relapse or refractory setting is pralatrexate. Pralatrexate is the first agent that was ever approved or introduced to treat PTCL, peripheral T-cell lymphomas. Pralatrexate is a relative of well-known chemotherapy agent methotrexate that we have used to treat lymphomas for a very long time, and actually also used this drug to treat various autoimmune conditions. And this was the first agent that was rationally designed to improve upon the activity of methotrexate and use the concept that we were very well familiar with. Pralatrexate belongs to a group of drugs called antifolates. And the way these agents work, they block the DNA synthesis in new tumor cells, thereby preventing them from multiplying and preventing tumor from growing. If tumors cannot synthesize their DNA, they undergo what we call committed or natural cell death or apoptosis. So when researchers started looking for a way to improve methotrexate, they came up with a new molecule, subsequently called pralatrexate, that had significantly higher what we call affinity or higher strength of binding to tumor cells. And once the pralatrexate enters the tumor cell, there is also the way that it gets trapped inside the tumor cell. And methotrexate, we think that one of the ways that methotrexate fails to cure patients with lymphomas is that it very quickly gets pumped out of the tumor cell. Pralatrexate is very different because once it enters the tumor cell by this stronger binding capacity, it gets changed by intracellular molecules, and the changed form of pralatrexate cannot exit the tumor cell. So this is the way of intracellular trapping of chemotherapy drug, and it allows to achieve very high concentration, and tumor cells cannot escape the treatment. When we treated patients with peripheral T-cell lymphomas who failed on average of three prior systemic therapies, and these were combination chemotherapies like CHOP, CHOP that Dr. Horvitz mentioned, and then these patients received treatment with intensified protocols to put them back in remission like ICE or so-called DHAP or ESHAP, and then failed these therapies. And traditionally, we consider these patients to be very refractory. They were entered into this international clinical trial and received treatment with a single agent pralatrexate. And considering that their lymphoma came back after one, two, three, or more prior therapies, and they were treated with a single agent, we've seen responses in just under a third of the patients. And one out of 10 patients achieved complete remission, where we restaged the person and the lymphoma signs, lymphoma symptoms completely gone away. So this was the first agent that showed this remarkable activity as a single agent treatment in peripheral T-cell lymphoma. So this was very exciting. We broke the ice with new treatments for this disease. Based on the results of this study, again, with almost 30% response rate, pralatrexate was approved in the United States for treatment of peripheral T-cell lymphomas, different varieties that have relapsed after prior therapies. The drug was well tolerated. The main side effect that we observed in the study and has to be watched very carefully was so-called mucositis or mouth inflammation, where a patient could develop painful mouth sores or sore throat, interfering with their eating habits. And the majority of patients had very quick resolution of the symptoms once the drug was on hold or we adjusted the dose. And what really prevented the development of this severe side effect was supplementation of vitamins. Vitamin B12 and folic acid helped significantly to reduce the incidence of the side effect. And what's also exciting that some patients in that study were treated for a very long period of time, up to 12 to 18 months, and we did not see significant cumulative toxicity, meaning that some patients can be treated for long, for many, many cycles without developing intolerance to the drug. I will now go to the second agent that was also tested on an international level in a prospective manner in a large clinical study or in collaboration of multiple centers. It is called romidepsin or dapsipeptide. This is a very different molecule, very different drug, and the way it works, it reboots the tumor cell DNA. So the tumor cells now are programmed to either undergo their natural death or it somehow shuts off their propensity to divide. So it is not a chemotherapy agent, what we like to call it, a biologic drug or targeted agent. And when it was tested in patients, again, who received multiple prior therapies for T-cell lymphomas, their lymphoma failed to respond or came back after treatment. These patients had very challenging disease because after multiple rounds of chemo, It is very difficult to achieve the response. So when these patients received, again, single-agent remdesivir, about a third of the patients responded to treatment, and one out of nine patients had complete resolution of disease-associated symptoms and appearance on the CAT scan or PET scan, so they had complete remission. And very encouraging is the fact that this drug was also very well tolerated. Patient could receive this treatment for many, many months. And at least in our institution, we had two patients who still continue therapy on that study beyond 2.5 years, and we do not see significant cumulative toxicity or side effects that get worse and worse with every round of chemotherapy. So this was the next very exciting agent that now could be used in patients whose lymphoma came back. The main side effect of this agent was nausea and fatigue. We have seen some low counts with remdesivir as well as pralatrexate, but they were very well manageable and usually significantly less severity that you would typically see with multi-agent chemotherapy. Once again, tolerance was very good, and patients could receive treatment for a long period of time. Finally, I will briefly mention a very new anti-T-cell lymphoma agent that was just approved, again, to treat patients with specific subtype of T-cell lymphoma called anaplastic large cell lymphoma that represents about 10% of all the T-cell lymphomas. And when this lymphoma comes back after initial treatment, it is not easy to put it back in remission and come up with definitive therapy. So recently, our local company in Seattle has come up with a very interesting concept, how to actually deliver chemotherapy drug to tumor cells. The concept is not new on its own, but the combination of the right drug, the right target or the right lymphoma, and the right chemotherapy agent became very successful. This agent has a very long chemical name, brentuximab vedotin, or we used to call it SGN-35. It is a molecule that has two parts. One part is a delivery vehicle. It is an antibody, a molecule that your body produces when you have infection, but in this case, it is targeted towards the tumor cells. So it is used as a vehicle, or sometimes when I talk to patients, I call it a missile. So the missile takes the drug that is attached to the antibody and called auristatin, and auristatin is a relative of a couple of other chemotherapy drugs we very frequently use in lymphomas. And when this drug is infused into one's bloodstream, the vehicle finds specifically tumor cells that have a target for it, attaches to it, and then tumor cell is fooled into believing this is either a signal or a food package, and it swallows it. And once it's swallowed and being digested, the chemotherapy agent is released in high concentrations inside the tumor cells, and it's almost impossible for tumor cells to survive. So in a way, you could look at it as a Trojan horse strategy. And when we treated patients with specifically anaplastic large T-cell lymphoma, again, who failed multiple prior therapies, and some of the patients failed autologous transplant, we've seen responses in 86% of patients. This is far above the range of previous agents that I discussed, but again, this is a very specific type of T-cell lymphomas. It was very exciting that a single agent can induce responses in so many patients with disease that traditionally, after relapse, is very difficult to treat. And what's even more remarkable, that over half of the patients achieved complete remission with single agent treatment, meaning their symptoms went away, and when we look at their PET scans and CT scans, we did not see any evidence of disease. Some of the patients were able to go to bone marrow transplant after achieving complete remission, but some of the patients continued therapy for quite a while. The main side effect that we observed with SGN-35 for brentuximab vedotin was what we call peripheral neuropathy, or numbness and tingling, sometimes painful numbness, tingling in fingertips and soles of the feet or toes. And once again, when the dose of the drug was adjusted or the doses were held, in more than half of the patients, the symptoms dissipated within several weeks, and they were able to continue therapy. So these three agents are new drugs that we are very excited to have for patients whose disease did not respond to initial treatment or came back after first achieving remission. And these agents were approved within the last couple of years. So it is very, very exciting that the science of peripheral T-cell lymphomas, the clinical science, is moving forward so quickly. Now, on an academic level, we are trying to do new studies with these agents and to learn how to use them in a frontline setting, meaning when patients have just been diagnosed with their peripheral T-cell lymphoma, so we don't have to wait for their lymphoma to relapse to use these active medications. So I will just mention several clinical trials that are open in the United States and in some other countries around the world with this new and very exciting drugs. I will start first with SGN-35 for brentuximab vedotin, again, the agent that is approved for anaplastic large T-cell lymphoma. Based on such an exciting response rate, such an exciting activity in this disease, we have initiated combination study where CHOP or CHOP-like combination is used as a backbone, and SGN-35 is added to treatment in patients with newly diagnosed disease. So the study just opened in the United States recently, and we are accumulating patients. We've seen very good responses, but until the results of this study are available and we're able to analyze all the patients together, I cannot really tell you how active this combination is going to be in a frontline treatment. I'm quite optimistic about this treatment, and probably majority of patients treated on this study will achieve durable remission. Now, the first agent that I have discussed, pralatrexate, we are also taking into the frontline treatment instead of waiting for patients to relapse and then use specific PTCL treatment. So we took CHOP-like combination called CEOP. It is a combination of cyclophosphamide, etoposide, and prednisone, similar to CHOP, and added pralatrexate in certain sequence to this treatment. So patients with newly diagnosed peripheral T-cell lymphomas can use this trial as their initial treatment. Somewhere in the country, combination of ramidepsin, the mentioned new agent with CHOP, is also being tested. The main question that we have on the clinical level right now, how to use this agent in a peritransplant setting, whether we should use the traditional high-dose intensified regimens prior to transplant, or these agents are sufficient to try first, and if patients are in remission, go to transplantation. I don't think we have the good answer. The rule of thumb is that most of the institution, still in younger patients, if you're going to transplant, will try to use as a second-line treatment, will try to use the more traditional, more studied regimens like ICE and DAP, and then go to transplant. And if these regimens fail, then the new agents would be a very, very good option. Now, for patients who are not eligible for transplantation, either elderly or have significant conditions that preclude that, then I think the treatment with pralatrexate, SGN-35, ramidepsin would be a very reasonable second option because it can be given for a prolonged period of time without significant toxicity. I'm running out of time. I can talk a lot about these new drugs and new trials, but for the sake of leaving some time for discussion, I will stop here. And again, just re-emphasize that we have three new drugs to treat patients with relapsed peripheral T-cell lymphomas that we're very excited about, and they seem to be quite active, and we're learning how to use these agents, how to put them together into the frontline treatment to improve outcomes in peripheral T-cell lymphomas. Thank you very much,
Dr. Shestov. Outstanding presentation and such an exciting time with the new treatment options for people. This is wonderful, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. Our next speaker is Brian Tomlinson. Brian is Chief Program Officer of the Lymphoma Research Foundation. I have to say that Brian is actually the architect of this entire series. He's been instrumental in getting support for the program, as well as actually identifying the best speakers and topics. So we really want to take a hats off to Brian for his important role here. And Brian is going to talk to you about the free services and programs offered by the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Brian?
Thank you, Carolyn, and thanks for that great introduction. Appreciate all that you and your team do to support the organization and the people that we serve. The Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care, we've worked together for over 15 years to present these teleconference programs in order to best meet the needs of people affected by the disease. I'd like to thank our esteemed faculty, Drs. Horwitz and Shusta, for their excellent presentations. As Carolyn mentioned, I'm sure there'll be many, many questions for both of them, and thank them for their presentations and their time being with us today. And lastly, I'd like to acknowledge the supporters of today's call, Alice Therapeutics, Celgene, and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest lymphoma-focused nonprofit devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing the lymphoma community with timely information on the disease. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. To date, the organization has funded over $47.5 million in lymphoma-specific research, and more than 40,000 people participate in our programs and services each year. These programs and services include a lymphoma helpline where our professional public health and mental health staff can assist you in your search for information about lymphoma and appropriate resources. You heard a lot about clinical trials today. We have a clinical trials information service where a member of our helpline team can assist you in your search for clinical trials. We have a national lymphoma support network, which is a one-to-one peer support program that matches lymphoma patients or caregivers with volunteers who have had similar lymphoma-related experiences. We have a variety of print and online publications and newsletters, including comprehensive disease guides, comprehensive disease-specific fact sheets, and informational e-newsletters. We have a variety of webcasts and podcasts that are available that talk about specific types of lymphoma, treatment options, and support topics, and all of these are available on our website. We do a variety of in-person patient conferences on the local, regional, and national level. And lastly, we have a newly released online resource, which is called Focus on PTCL website. It provides accurate disease-specific information, including diagnosis overview, treatment options, and free patient and caregiver resources. I encourage all of you on the phone to visit this website today at focusonptcl.org and sign up to receive future updates. For more information, please contact a member of our helpline team by calling us at 1-800-500-9976 or visiting our website, lymphoma.org. Again, thank you to Carolyn, our speakers, and the supporters of today's call. Carolyn?
Well, thank you very much, Brian. Thank you for that, all the wonderful resources that the Lymphoma Research Foundation offers, and just thanks for being on the call today and all that you do. Thank you. And our next speaker is Jennifer Viano, and Jennifer is Chief Executive Officer, Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. And also a thank you to Jennifer and the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation for their support of our program today. And Jennifer is going to talk with you today about the free services and programs offered by the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. I'm going to turn the program over to Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, and good afternoon, everyone. It is great to be with you on the call, and it's really wonderful to have so many people with us on the call today. I'd first like to thank our collaborators, the Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care, and our generous corporate supporters of the call today, Alice and Celgene, whose support has made today's call possible. And I'd like to thank Drs. Horowitz and Shusta for their absolutely wonderful presentations today and for their support of the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. During the call thus far, I hope that everyone's learned that even though this is a rare cancer and one that can be very challenging for patients in so many ways, we really are truly so fortunate to have such outstanding and dedicated physicians like Dr. Horowitz and Dr. Shustov working so hard on improving treatments and working toward a better understanding of peripheral T-cell lymphoma. One of the most important messages that I'd like to convey today is for you to always keep in mind that the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation is also available to help you with information, resources, and support that includes educational opportunities, how to locate specialists, information on treatment options, many that were discussed on the call today, helpful tips for managing symptoms, one-on-one assistance and support, the latest news in research and advocacy efforts, and importantly, ways that patients can connect with other patients. Programs that are available at our foundation include patient educational forums that we hold in the United States and Canada, our website that's available at www.clfoundation.org, our patient and treatment center referral network available at our website, a library of printed electronic education materials, personal assistance that's available via phone and email, research funding, and advocacy efforts. Last year, approximately 1,000 patients, physicians, and others benefited from attendance at our educational forums. Approximately 40,000 people visited our website, and approximately 5,000 people benefited from receiving our printed and electronic newsletters. The Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation exists to make sure that each person with cutaneous lymphoma gets the best care possible, and we encourage you to please be in touch with us anytime that we can help you. And lastly, I just want to encourage everyone to please visit our website often to learn about upcoming educational forums that you can attend and other educational opportunities available to you, And specifically, I just wanted to mention a couple of forums that are coming up later this year, including one on October 22nd in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and one on November 5th in Tampa, Florida, that may be in your area. And we'll also be announcing many more locations for these forums in 2012, so please visit our website often for news on these, and we hope to see you there. And in closing, once again, please just be in touch and let us know how we can help you. Thanks so much again for being on the call, and we look forward to staying in touch.
Well, thank you very much, Jennifer, and just for those very warm words of, first of all, welcome to everybody, and also for identifying all the different services that people can access from the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. Thank you. And our next speaker is Rick Dickens. Rick is an oncology social worker. He's clinical supervisor at Cancer Care and Blood Cancers Program Coordinator, Mind, Body, Spirit Project Coordinator for Cancer Care. And Rick is going to describe the free psychosocial support services that you can access from Cancer Care. Rick?
Thank you, Carolyn. And hello to everybody on the line. It's really a pleasure to be part of this important call and tell you about the support services Cancer Care offers. A diagnosis of cancer is difficult for patients and those who love and work with them. Cancer Care has over 40 master's degree social workers specializing in oncology who are here to help you resolve some of the conflicts that might arise and ultimately help you find some peace. Now, that might be emotional peace through one of our many professionally facilitated telephone, online, and face-to-face groups, or in a counseling intervention with one of our oncology social workers. Peace can be some respite from financial concerns through one of our financial grants or one of our Cancer Care fact sheets that identify other resources. And finally, knowledge and peace of mind can come through one of our Connect workshops like today, or guidance on how to navigate the complicated world of cancer treatment, healthcare communication, insurance issues, or community-based resources that you weren't aware of. Tips that can guide you along this process. Number one, do your research. The Internet is a good place to start, but there are also many helpful organizations such as Cancer Care that can guide you through this process. Becoming a knowledgeable consumer will go a long way toward giving you a sense of control and making you an active member in your treatment decisions. Two, take your time. Saying I need a day to think about this can give you an opportunity to catch your breath and get feedback from loved ones and from other resources. And three, speak up. Remember, your doctor and oncology team can't treat a problem if you don't make them aware of it. They are the experts of your disease, but you are the expert of your body. At Cancer Care, we can't promise to solve all of the concerns that arise out of a cancer diagnosis and treatment, but with over 60 years in the ever-changing field of oncology, we are dedicated to trying one patient and one family at a time. You can contact Cancer Care and speak to a social worker at 1-800-813-HOPE or reach us online and view our website at www.cancercare.org. And I wish you all the best there.
Thank you very much, Rick. Excellent presentation and really for identifying all the services that people can access from Cancer Care. Most importantly, I want you to all know that there are these three organizations, Lymphoma Research Foundation, Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and Cancer Care. These are organizations that you can really go to immediately as you start to get help and search out help to really get really hooked into getting some really appropriate help for any concerns you may have. Well, now we have time for questions. I'm going to ask Mary to explain to you how to queue up for questions. I'm going to ask Mary also to bring all of our speakers on board. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Mary, would you explain to everybody how to queue up for questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Winnie L.
Yes, hi. One of the doctors had mentioned about pralatrexate and as a possible drug. I had read in some of the literature that there may be some studies that are focused on the combination of using pralatrexate with gemcitabine, and I wanted to hear if that is something that is an ongoing study and what may have been some progress regarding that.
Well, thank you very much, Winnie, for that excellent question. I'm going to ask Dr. Shostak to address that question.
Well, I would be happy to address this question, but actually Dr. Steve Horvitz was the
chair of that particular trial, so I think Dr. Horvitz would have probably a better answer, or he has a lot of information about this combination, and again, he was chairing the study.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Dr.
Horvitz?
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm happy to talk about that. So in the laboratory, it looked like pralatrexate and gemcitabine would work very well together and be a much more potent therapy. And gemcitabine is, of course, another chemotherapy that we do often use for T-cell lymphomas, either in the skin or in the body, and it can work quite well. What happened when we combined those medicines together in people was that it looked like, while the two could be active together, is that they caused more side effects than expected, particularly lowering the blood counts, both the platelets and the white blood cells. So we initially did a phase one study where we were looking at what dose of those two medicines together on what schedule in people would be reasonably tolerated to then go forward. And what happened was when we combined them together, we could only give less than half the dose of each drug. So we ended up being able to give very low doses of each medicine when we put them together. And it looked like those low doses, because the doses were so low, that combination wasn't any better than either of the drugs by itself. So it was one of the disappointments that we had, where it looked ahead of time like that could be a really good new treatment, but when we actually did the study, the doses that were tolerable were just not enough to make it better than either drug alone. So we don't recommend giving those drugs together right now because of that study.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Stephen S.
Hello, I have angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma, and my question is, and it's been in remission 4 years, my question is, if it returns, what would be the decision-making process that would cause a doctor to recommend either an autologous stem cell transplant, which is, of course, basically higher dose chemo, versus one of the three new drugs?
Thank you for that question. Excellent, Stephen. I'm going to ask Dr. Shustov to address that question.
Sure, it'll be my pleasure. So angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma is a very specific biological and clinically subtype of peripheral T-cell lymphomas. And if you were in remission for the past 4 years, in fact, this is a very good result of initial therapy. So if your disease ever were to come back, you can do a couple of things. It can be either treated with the same regimen you received before if it's permissive. Sometimes the doses of chemotherapy you had are not permitting you to receive the same regimen. But if you're in remission for 4 years, that means the initial strategy was very successful. You can try to use the same regimen you used before, and then if complete remission is achieved again, consider autologous transplant, because the worldwide data indicate that in this particular type of T-cell lymphoma, if you achieve complete remission even the second time, the autologous transplant provides probably the longest benefit in terms of maintaining a disease-free state. If your health permits to undergo high-dose therapy, that would probably be my preferred option. Again, having said that, you would still have to receive initial therapy to achieve remission again. And if the first round was so successful, you can attempt to use the same treatment. If it's not permissive to use the same treatment or you don't respond, then I would go to one of the mentioned the new drugs, and specifically for this lymphoma, I would use romidepsin over pralatrexate, just from some signals that it might be slightly more active in AITL or angioimmunoblastic lymphoma than pralatrexate. So those would be your couple of options.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I hope that helps, Steve. And next question, please.
Our next question comes from Sid G.
Oh, hi. I just had a CT scan 7-8 days ago, and I've got a couple of, I guess, sort of bumps on my groin, and I just want to know if that is part of the T-cell, or is it possible that's something else, some other part of some other cancer that is showing up?
Vincent, do you have any other types of cancer, or that you've had?
No, I don't. That's all I have is a T-cell.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you for that question. I'm going to ask Dr. Horwitz to address your question in a general way, and then we hope you'll take that information back to your treating healthcare team, who can help further, of course, with specifics. But Dr. Horwitz, could you give some guiding thoughts here?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, bumps in the groin are something that would be hard to assess over the phone. But in general, one of the more common presentations of lymphoma would be swollen lymph nodes. And in the groin area is a place where if a lymph node is swollen, we can often feel it because it's one of the places in the body where the lymph nodes are closer to the skin. That being said, everyone has lymph nodes in their body, and those lymph nodes have a very normal job in the immune system. And when the body is fighting off an infection or there's inflammation in other ways, things that don't have anything to do with cancer, that is a common sign of that would be that the lymph nodes would get swollen. That being said, things that are more serious, like cancer, lymphomas, or other kinds of cancers, can often involve a lymph node. So it sounds like your doctors took the swollen lymph node seriously and performed a CAT scan to look further into that. I would say T-cell lymphomas are very rare, again, 6,000 to 9,000 people in the United States. So your first thought would never be T-cell lymphoma. The first question the doctors would ask would be, is this the immune system normally reacting to something like an infection or inflammation, or is it an abnormality of the immune system? And then if they felt it was abnormal, the next step they would think about would either be a close period of observation or a biopsy to see what was in those lymph nodes. And only if that showed lymphoma, and then what subtype, I think, would we get down to a diagnosis of T-cell lymphoma. So it sounds like they're looking into it. But, again, T-cell lymphomas are very rare, and swollen lymph nodes are very common and certainly don't always mean cancer.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thanks. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Rick W.
Yes. I have two questions. My first one would be SGN35 and CD30 positive tumors. Would you consider that as an appropriate treatment for tumors that are CD30 positive? My second question is, has there been any research that you're aware of using doxycycline as an anti-tumor adjunct to treatment? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the questions. Dr. Horwitz, could you address those questions?
Sure. CD30 is the marker that SGN35 targets. So in a very broad sense, that would at least make it reasonable. However, the studies being done with SGN35 have only been on a couple of types of lymphoma that specifically the tumor cells pretty much always express CD30, and those are anaplastic large cell lymphoma, which is the name that describes a couple of subtypes of T-cell lymphoma, and then also Hodgkin lymphoma, which is another lymphoma that expresses CD30. So right now, the only data we really have and the only approved use of SGN35 is specifically for Hodgkin lymphoma or anaplastic large cell lymphoma, those specific kinds of lymphoma that have come back after other treatments. There are some studies going on to look at other kinds of lymphoma that express CD30 to see if SGN35 is a good treatment or not for those lymphomas. But right now, that's the subject of a clinical trial, and those studies are open in some places around the United States, so that would be something that you could look into. But we wouldn't have experience to use that outside of a clinical trial. Doxycycline is a little complicated. Antibiotics in general, of which doxycycline is one, do have some nonspecific anti-inflammatory properties. And we have had experiences in some very slow-growing skin lymphomas, particularly a lymphoma called marginal zone lymphoma, which is a B-cell lymphoma of the skin, so different than what we're talking about today, where we do sometimes see those lymphomas shrink with antibiotics like doxycycline. So in a very general sense, there is some relationship there, but we wouldn't have any experience that an aggressive lymphoma or a fast-growing or peripheral T-cell lymphoma could adequately be treated with doxycycline.
Okay, excellent. Marianne, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Robert C.
Is there any role for light therapy at this time?
Okay, thank you for that question, Robert. Dr. Shestov, could you address that question?
Sure. So the light therapy is a very frequently used type of treatment for skin T-cell lymphomas or primary cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. And they, in fact, light therapy could be very effective in patients who have very thin, very narrow involvement of the skin without skin tumors, without thick plaques. And specifically, we're talking about the subtype of cutaneous T-cell lymphoma called mycosis fungoides. We very frequently use light therapy in early stages or when the skin involvement is very thin. The reason we do not use it outside this indication or outside this scenario is that the penetration of the light is very, very superficial, as you can imagine. So really, we're relying on ultraviolet rays to penetrate within less than a millimeter into the skin depth. So it's not going to have significant effect in patients who have lymph node involvement or involvement of peripheral blood or whose skin lymphoma is thick enough that just 1 millimeter penetration is not going to have the effect. Now, in more advanced skin lymphomas, there is a specific type of light therapy called extracorporeal photopheresis. This is the long term for the technology where actually not your skin, but your blood is being subjected to UV rays, and then the blood is returned, and there are certain immune stimulation happens that might have effect, but again, on specifically cutaneous T-cell lymphoma or skin T-cell lymphoma. It has no role in systemic T-cell lymphomas.
And we do have a question from one of our online participants in terms of really the whole issue of this being a rare disease and how they should really go about accessing their care in terms of just when they see a doctor, what kinds of questions might be good to ask so that they know they're going to getting the best care for themselves. I'm going to ask Dr. Horwitz if you would address that and Dr. Shustov as well.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so this is always a big issue when you have an uncommon or a rare disease. A part of it, because even in the centers where people see a lot, you know, it's just what we know about the disease is not as well established. So I think the first thing that I'll tackle with this disease is having the right diagnosis and doing the best you can to make sure you have the right diagnosis. And that means two things. That means understanding from the pathology report the most specific name for your lymphoma and also making sure that the pathology report or that the review has been as thorough as possible. And one of the things that we know about some of these rare lymphomas is that sometimes different pathologists can have a different opinion, and it's not always absolutely clear what subtype of T-cell lymphoma you have. So a lot of times what we'll do here, even at a big center, is we'll send the pathology out for a second opinion or make sure that everything really looks right. So I think if you're being treated at a place that maybe doesn't have a huge experience or isn't a big center, one of the easiest things to do is to ask your doctor if they can get an expert pathology review. That doesn't require you to go anywhere, and just your slides can be sent, and just make sure everyone's on the same page with exactly what illness you have, because the treatment decisions really fall from that specific diagnosis. So I think that's something that people really can sort of do to empower themselves and try to make sure that at least the diagnosis is right, and that gives you a leg up in making the best treatment decisions.
Excellent. And Dr. Shustov?
Yeah, I completely agree with Dr. Horwitz. I would just add that in the ideal world, when people are diagnosed with rare diseases, rare cancer, or rare non-cancerous conditions, it is certainly beneficial to hear the opinion of physicians who see several of these cases per year as opposed to one case per year. But in the real world, patients live away from academic centers, not have means to travel, or don't have access immediately to academic centers. However, I would emphasize that there are some other ways that both patients and their physicians can receive education on rare cases and rare information. I would refer back to Lymphoma Research Foundation that has fantastic website and connectivity to patients with this lymphoma that patients and their families can learn a lot on their level. Also, there is an NIH website that can get a lot of information from on the physician level. A lot of academic centers offer this free phone consultative services. I know we have one at our institution where physicians from different states can call in and request a specialist in certain diseases, and physicians in different states without having their patients fly for consultation or having to travel to meetings for specific lymphoma or specific cancer can receive a very concise and fairly useful information from academician. So Lymphoma Research Foundation for patients as well as NIH and academic centers, phone consultation for physicians would be one way that patients don't have to travel. But I certainly would encourage asking questions about how many patients your physicians treats and whether it's beneficial for you to receive consultation if it's affordable and feasible. But there are other resources that, again, your oncologist and you yourself can use to get educated.
Excellent. I want to thank you very much. I want to thank all of our speakers today. This has been an extraordinary call. I want to thank all of our speakers. I want to thank all of you who queued up and asked really such excellent questions. And I want to thank all of you who have been listening. I do want to remind you this is a one-hour education program and that we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. Therefore, you do have resources now, and you may have known some of those resources before, but I just want to repeat them, how important they are. You have the Lymphoma Research Foundation. You have the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation and Cancer Care as three organizations that we could say call us, you know, go ahead and call us if you have any questions or concerns. And you have all the other collaborating organizations as well. Most importantly, we don't want anyone to leave this call feeling that you're alone. We want you to know that you're part of a community of support. We're here to help you, and please do call all of us. I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.